This is the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray, episode 160.
Welcome to the Soulful PR Podcast. Tune in every week for practical tips, strategies, and case studies that will help you get media coverage for your business. And now, here's your host, Janet Murray.
Hello, and welcome to the show. In this episode, I'm going to be talking about why you need to stay small if you want to go big in your business. Sounds counterintuitive, but there's a lot of truth in it. But before we get to the main part of the show, I just wanted to mention a couple of bits of news for you. So first off, I've recently started a Twitter hour on Sunday evenings over on Twitter, of course. The hashtag that we're using is SoulfulPRHour. And it's basically a chance for business owners to get together once a week and talk about the different ways that they're promoting their businesses, perhaps the challenges that you're having. And I'm also bringing along guests to the chat as well. So on Sunday evening, just gone, we had James Hurley, who's the enterprise editor from The Times. So it was a great opportunity for those who took part to put questions to him about what kind of ideas he's looking for, what he's not looking for, what he's looking for in a pitch, how the section is put together, so the different kinds of stories that he runs on different days. And those people who took part, I think, found it really, really useful. So that's the Soulful PR Hour. That's the chat that we use. If you haven't been in a Twitter chat before, then it can be a little bit challenging when you first got going, keeping track of all the threads. And the best advice I can really give you is just to kind of get stuck in and give it a try. And don't worry about it being perfect. If you lose the thread of a conversation, or if you can't find a question or whatever, then just answer whatever you can or get stuck in and talk to the people out there that sound interesting to you. I've created a blog post, which I'll link to in the show notes, which is all about how to get involved in Twitter chats. And you might also find it useful to listen to my podcast episode 151 with Sean Conway, when we talked about how to take part in Twitter chats and also how to start your own. A couple of things to share with you, actually, since I started the Twitter chat, is that we only had the second one last week, but I had a lady who took part in the chat who decided to buy one of my books, went away and read it in one sitting as a result of being on the chat. And then the next day, she managed to join my membership community, the Soulful PR Studio. Now, this takes some doing, but she managed to join it even though it's currently closed. So we are very, very glad to have her. And obviously, she's perfectly welcome to join. But actually, the doors were officially closed for the moment. She managed to find a link and find her way in, which sounds pretty persistent, doesn't it? But it just goes to show, only the second week of the Twitter chat. So I had somebody who took part who bought a book, because in the course of this discussion, I said, oh, you might want to have a look at my book. She bought it, went away and read it, and was so kind of taken by what she read and felt it really kind of resonated with her that she came along and joined my membership community, even though it was closed, which I think is amazing. So if you've been thinking of starting a Twitter chat, there's a little bit of a story for you that might kind of help you to decide. And the other bit of news for you is that I've also recently launched a Facebook group exclusively for my podcast listeners. Now, you may remember I mentioned this a couple of episodes ago, but I'd noticed that my own posts, and in particular the posts about my content, so my new podcast episodes, my new blog posts, that we were lining up on Meet Edgar. So I use this social media scheduling app, Meet Edgar. So we were lining up our content on there. Obviously, I've got a lot of content, so we do tend to do it like that. And I was just noticing that it wasn't getting seen in my Facebook group. I've got 8,500 members now in the Facebook group. I thought, this is really, really strange. And obviously my content, you know, I spend a lot of time creating this content. I really want to get it out in front of people who are really interested in it. And obviously the members of my Soulful PR community are clearly interested in the topic, but they weren't getting to see it. So I decided to start an exclusive Soulful PR Facebook community. So this is exclusively for people who listen to the podcast. And it's simply the Soulful PR Podcast Community. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes. So do come along. The chat really is around the podcast. So the latest episodes, you know, what you learned from it, what things you're going to sort of put into practice, any questions that you've got about episodes, any questions you've got about the guests. Also, we're going to be chatting about future episodes. So topics that you might like to see covered, maybe you can suggest guests to me. But also, I'm working on the assumption, and I think this is quite correct, that people who listen to the Soulful PR podcast are generally podcast fans. So we're also in there talking about other podcasts that we like and recommending other episodes to listen to, and also books as well. So it's just a really nice community, quite a small community, for those who follow the podcast regularly and want to kind of really be involved in that and also be involved in creating the future content, because I'm always, always open to ideas about who to have on the show and also any topics that I might cover in the future. So do come over and join us there. It's the Soulful PR Podcast community, and I'll link to that in the show notes. And lastly, I just wanted to mention my Soulful PR live event. So this is my annual event that I hold every summer. And the premise of this event is I basically get 8 national journalists in the room with you for a day in London. We hold the event at the Trampery, which is kind of a funky co-networking space in East London. And I've got some amazing journalists coming this time. So I've got someone from BBC Radio 4's Woman's Hour. I've got somebody from Marie Claire magazine, someone from ITV's This Morning, a couple of people from The Guardian, someone from The Mirror, someone from The New Statesman. So it's a really, really high profile lineup of speakers. And the idea really is to get you in a room with them for a day so that you can find out what they're looking for in a story, what they're not looking for, the best ways to get in touch, and also how not to get in touch. And just generally to give you the opportunity to meet these people, to find out what makes them tick, to chat with them. The way we organise the event is that all the journalists do speak, but there's loads of opportunities to ask some questions. And I ask them to stay all day, to sit at the tables with you, so you can actually just, you know, chat to them and even run ideas past them during the day. So the idea is just to give you as much access as possible. And we also have a speed networking session at lunchtime. So I'm really, really excited about it this year. I've got a couple of added extras this year. So we introduced this last year, actually, a mastermind session at the end of the day. So 8, we might be able to push it to 10 if there's a demand. We're almost sold out of these, but 8 delegates can basically spend an extra couple of hours with the speakers. You get 20 minutes in the hot seat to talk about your business, the challenges that you're having with your PR, and get really personalized feedback. And that was really, really popular last year. You've probably, if you're a regular listener to the show, you've heard me talk about some of the success stories from the event. But we had Emma Mapp, who had her really funky camera bag. She brought it along to the event. She met the editor of Stylist last year and also the editor of The Guardian's Christmas gift guide, showed them the bag, and they ended up featuring her bag. And it's really tough to get into The Guardian Christmas gift guide. We also had Lucy Parsons, who was so inspired by what she heard on the day that she went off and pitched a story to The Telegraph the following day. So not one of the speakers that she'd met, but something just clicked into place for her. We've also had, from Soulful PR events, we've had a couple of pieces recently. So Kate Beavis and Salma Shah, they've both been featured in Marie Claire. And it was because they took the trouble to come along, meet the editor in person, and then follow up with a pitch afterwards. So it really does work. Obviously, you need to put in the work. If you come along to the event, then you do need to follow up with the speakers after, and you do need to make sure that you try and speak to them throughout the day. But there's loads and loads of opportunities. And what I've also added on this day is a day 2. So in the day 2 session last year, basically what happened is people were coming back and saying, this was an amazing day. I just learned so much, but wow, I feel like I need some help just to kind of assimilate it all, to put it into order, and to kind of come up with a game plan really of what I'm going to do with all this stuff. So I've introduced a day 2 so that you can come back the following day and work with me for the day. I've also got a special guest coming as well, and you heard it here first. So Sarah Tasker, the Instagram expert who has built an amazing business from being on Instagram, from posting photographs on Instagram, she's going to be our lunchtime speaker on day 2. And she's going to be talking about how she's built her business, but also sharing some tips on, you know, becoming successful on Instagram and using that to promote your business or your brand. So it's going to be an absolutely fabulous couple of days. So if you're listening in the future, this is July the 13th and 14th in London. You only have to come to the first day. The second day is an optional, as is the mastermind session at the end of the day. We've only got 8, possibly 10 places on that anyway. So if you're interested in coming along to Soulful PR Live, then I'll put a link in the show notes. We've sold over half the tickets already, and we're at this stage, I think, 10 weeks away from the event as I'm recording this. So that tells me that we're probably going to have a sellout. So if you're interested in coming, then don't delay booking your tickets. And also the prices obviously go up nearer to the event. So if this sounds of interest, get in touch, just email me with a question. I'm on janet@janetmurray.co.uk. Myself or my assistant Joe will always get back and answer your questions. It's not in my interest to have people at the event who it's not right for them to be there, because obviously they're not going to have a great experience and they're not going to tell people they've had a great experience. I want to have 80 people there who have had the most amazing day of their lives. and want to tell everybody about it afterwards and get success and get results. So it's not in our interest to tell you to come along if it's not for you. So just reach out and ask if you're not sure. And one question I get asked a lot actually is this suitable for me if I have a product-based business? Absolutely. If you have a product-based business, in fact, I think it could almost be more useful for you to come along and just see the different ways that you might be able to get featured in the press. There are many more ways than just getting your products reviewed, and this is something you'll really learn on the day. So it's slightly longer intro than usual, but lots of news to tell you this week. So now I'll just get on with the main part of the show. So in this episode, I'm going to be talking about why you need to go small if you want to go big with your business. And by that, I don't mean thinking small or being unambitious, but I mean just really focusing down on the things that matter, or in fact, the one thing that matters. And I'm going to look at five key areas of your business where you need to do this. So the first area is actually how you tell people what you do or your niche. And I think the most successful business owners that I know, they have one thing in common, and that's that they're generally known for one thing. Now, it doesn't mean that they don't do other things, but generally there is one key word or one key phrase that people associate with them. And I'll give you a few examples from recent podcast guests. So we had on episode 157, we had Mike Vardy, who is the productivity guy. Now, Mike does do other stuff as well, but he's mainly known for productivity. You think of productivity and you think of Mike. We also had Gavin Bell back in episode 145. Now, Gavin does lots of things as well. He does social media, he does video marketing, but the key thing he's known for is Facebook ads. Then we had Mark Schaefer back in episode 137. He's a social media expert and people know him for that, but actually he's developing a sub niche because he's recently written a book on how to get known. So his latest thing is people know him for learning how to get known in your industry. And we've also had Jeff C back in episode 135 and Melissa Griffin, episode 129. They're both known as Pinterest experts. They actually both do other things as well, but because they've chosen to really niche down, and actually the interview that I did with Jeff, that was episode 135, that's what we talked about. That's, you know, we talked about getting known for one thing. And although Jeff does do lots of work in social media, he's actually quite knowledgeable about various different platforms, but because he started the Manly Pinterest podcast, he's really made that the focus of his business, and that's what people know him for. Now, the thing about getting known for one thing or having one word or phrase that people associate with you, it can be quite scary, because I think our natural instinct is to think that if we niche down, if we say that we only do one thing, then people, basically we won't get as many clients, we won't get as many leads. But actually, without exception, in my work with clients, I've seen the absolute opposite is true, because people love specialists. You know, if I've broken my arm, I don't want to go and see a hematologist. I want to go and see a bone doctor. And I think all of us want to go to the go-to person. We want to find the person who is the leading expert in their industry. And you may think, if you're listening to this and you have a product-based business, you may well think this doesn't apply to you. But actually, you can take this approach with a product-based business as well, because you could get known for doing a particular kind of product, or, you know, being a specialist or in a particular type of thing. But it doesn't mean that you can't stock other types of products. It doesn't mean that you can't bring on new lines. But being known for one thing or one type of product is going to be much better for you. And somebody who comes to mind actually is Kiara Stone. Her business is Hoobinoo, and they do accessories for pets. Now, I've noticed, having a look at their website, that actually they also do gifts and accessories for people as well. But when I think of Kiara's business, when I think about her website and her brand on social media, I think pets, and I think that's really, really useful. And Kate McQuillan, who I've also had on the podcast, she has Pet Sitters Island. When I think of Kate, I think of pet sitting. Now, Kate does other things as well, but just having that key thing, that one thing that people associate with you, just makes it so much easier. Now, just to share a story of my own, this is something I really, really struggled with actually over the last few years, because if you're a regular listener to the podcast, you'll know that my background is journalism. So I spent 16 years writing and editing for national newspapers, and kind of fell into teaching people how to do PR, and fell into teaching small business owners how to do PR. So it's been quite uncomfortable for me to start calling myself a PR expert. And if you know anything about journalism, then you'll know that generally there isn't much love lost between journalists and PR. In fact, when a journalist goes to work in PR, as they often do, it's often talked about as going over to the dark side. And so I struggled to kind of start calling myself a PR expert because I was still working as a journalist, for starters. I still do some writing. I still do some editing on The Guardian. So it felt like that title didn't quite fit me. But in the end, I had to go with it because it's helpful for potential customers. They don't want to come to my website or my social media profiles and see that I'm a journalist stroke PR expert stroke writing tutor or whatever. They want to see that I'm a PR expert, that I am the go-to person in my industry. And I think that's, although there's other people out there doing what I do in the UK, I'm probably, I would say, one of the most well-known people for doing it. And that's really useful for people. People find that reassuring. If they know, you know, there's somebody asks a question about PR, people say, oh, you need to talk to this person, or you need to talk to Janet Murray. You know, that's really where you want to be. And going down that route can feel a bit scary because you can feel like, oh, but I do other things as well. And if people don't know that I do those other things, then I could be missing out on business. But actually, I found that actually the more focused you are and the more that you really niche down, the more people want to work with you. It doesn't mean you can't do other things. I still do copywriting training. I do a lot of radio and TV training, for example. And if you went to my website, you probably wouldn't find any mention of those two services. But people do get in touch and they do ask me to do that and they hear about me through word of mouth. So that's absolutely fine. I still get to do that work. And I've just recently sent out a batch of emails to my media training clients from the last year or two just to remind them that it's been a while since they last had media training and offer them a refresher. So it doesn't mean that behind the scenes you can't be approaching people or telling people about the other things that you do. But I think if you have one core focus, then I've seen it time and time again with my clients, you get more business. People are much more interested in doing business with specialists. And this approach, as I said, it took me a while to kind of ease into it because I had all these kind of issues about still being a journalist and I felt like I didn't want to drop that. But the minute I dropped the journalist stroke writing consultant stroke PR expert, that's really when things started to take off in my business for me. So the other area that I think you need to look at, the second area when it comes to going small in order to go big, is social media. So I see a lot of small business owners trying to be out there on every platform, doing everything for everybody. And what generally ends up happening is they do a couple of weeks on three or four platforms and then they just kind of give up and stop posting anything. It's much better to post regularly on one platform and get really good at that and get into that habit and get that licked before moving on to the next one. It's much better to post once a day on Instagram, but do it consistently for 30 to 60 days, get really good at it, and then move on to something else that is just so much better for you and your business. And you've probably read all the research about habit forming, but it generally takes at least 30 days to adopt a new habit. So that's really what you need with your social media. It almost needs to come to the point, posting on a social media platform, it needs to be like, you're so used to doing it that it's almost like harder not to do it. And I think you need to do that on each platform. If you're out there trying to form a new habit on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook all at the same time, unless you're very, very disciplined, then you're probably going to find that you're going to fail. It's a bit like a diet. You'll fall off the wagon. And so I would always start small with that. So, you know, don't have these massive ambitions to post X times a day. You know, with Twitter, you might want to start off by saying, right, I'm just going to do a month of posting three or four times a day. With Instagram, just once a day is fine. With a Facebook page, a good post once a day is probably fine. And I would really focus, instead of doing lots of posts, in actually promoting the posts and making sure that people see them and engage them. The engagement is so much more important. So, you know, one post, but actually spending time getting people to share it and comment on it, that is going to be much more valuable to you and your business. As I say, it's about habit forming. So social media, if you're someone like me who loves Facebook, it's the worst habit in the world. You know, the first thing I do when I pick up my phone is I look at Facebook, then I look at Twitter. I have almost like a routine that I go through. I almost wish that I didn't. But if you can get into that routine where it becomes so second nature that it's almost harder not to do it, then that's really where you want to be. And tackling your social media platforms like that, one at a time, you're much more likely to stick at it. So another area I think where you need to think small or start small if you want to go big is with your content creation. So as part of my Soulful PR Studios, that's my membership community, we have a 90-day blog challenge. And basically, the premise is this. This is all you have to do to be in the challenge is commit to posting one blog post, or it could be a video, or it could be a podcast episode, whatever type of content that you say you're going to create, and just do that once a week for 12 weeks. And again, it's about that kind of habit forming. Now, at this stage, people often try and kind of get one step ahead. Okay, well, how do I get people to actually read my content? How do I get comments? How do I get likes and shares? And for me, the key thing, if somebody hasn't created content regularly on their own website, and if you have a business, by the way, you should be doing that, then the key thing is to get them in the habit of doing it. So actually, that's the hard bit, is turning up every week, posting some content, even if you're worried that it's not your perfect work, even if you wish you'd have more time, or even if you're not sure if it's quite right, but it's actually getting into that content creation habit. So what I try and encourage people to do is to get into that habit first, and then once again, it's become a habit that it's almost harder not to do your weekly blog post, it kind of annoys you, then you can really focus on trying to get readers and subscribers. And of course, you can do all of that as you're going along. But if you're posting blog posts and then you're obsessing over how to get more eyes on them and obsessing over your stats and whatever, that can actually distract you from the first thing that you need to do for regular content creation, which is actually create good quality content. And again, when it comes to content creation, I think starting small is always a good idea. One thing I really wish I'd done with this podcast, and my friend Colin Gray, who I interviewed back in episode 61, told me this at the time, but I didn't listen, was to create my podcast in seasons. Now, I just started my podcast and now I have two shows a week. It's a big commitment. And I feel like if I was to stop doing it now, then I would sort of disappoint people. But actually, it is hard work. There are times when it's a challenge to find new guests that are suitable for the show. There are times when it's a challenge to come up with ideas. And it would have been far more sensible, I think, for me to come up with a season format where I did a series of episodes, perhaps on a similar theme, then took a break and then brought a new one back. And if you are thinking of starting a podcast or a YouTube channel, it's a really good approach to take. Instead of saying, right, I'm going to have a YouTube channel and I'm going to be on there every week, or I'm going to have a podcast, weekly podcast show, just say, well, I'm going to make 4 episodes and see how that goes, or I'm going to make 8 episodes or 12 episodes. And the season format really works well because it gives you a chance to consolidate afterwards to see what worked, what didn't work. You can shelf a podcast if it's not working that well, that's fine. You can try something different instead. It gives you long enough to try it, but not so long that you're kind of tied in for the rest of your life and it ends up feeling like a noose around your neck. And that's certainly not how I feel about the Soulful PR podcast at all. However, I think having a bit of breathing space is not only good for you as the host, but also it creates anticipation as well. So if you knew that this podcast was going to be taking a break over the summer and coming back in the autumn, then hopefully you'd be excited about it coming back. So there's many, many reasons why it's good to think about seasons for video and podcasts as well. So another area, I think, where you need to start small if you want to go big is when it comes to selling products and programs. So a very common conversation that I have with my clients in the Soulful PR Studio, so that's my membership community, is they say they want to create an online program. And they'll tell me that they want to create some kind of online course so that they have a form of passive income. And I'll say to them, well, how many of these courses do you want to sell? And they say, well, you know, a few hundred I'd need to sell in order to kind of meet my target. And then I'll say, well, who's your audience? Who are you going to sell it to? Well, I don't have an audience yet. And I don't have an email list. And email lists obviously do take a time to build up. So the advice that I generally give is, instead of going all out and creating an online course that you don't actually know whether people want or need at this stage, how about just creating a small group program, a small group program version of your course? This has so many benefits. So first of all, it gives you an opportunity to try out your material on a small group of people so that the risk is less. You can create the content as you go. So if it's a 12-week program or an 8-week program, you can actually create it each week and tweak according to the feedback that you're getting from your participants. And you'll also get testimonials as well, because I don't think you can go out there with a big course that you're hoping to sell to hundreds of people if you don't have any testimonials from people who've actually tried out the materials. Now, you might say, well, I could get a beta group to test it out, or beta, however you want to say it. But actually, people generally don't value what they get for free. So if you give somebody a free course, the chances are, and I've seen this time and time again, they will either do it half-heartedly or they won't even finish it at all. So asking people to pay you something, even if it's not the full price, to do a small, like a micro version of your course, it's just a win-win all round. Because in my case, with my first group program, I charged people £600 to do a 12-week program. And I told them that when I'd run it through a few times, it was going to be £1,800, which is exactly what happened. But they were really happy because they were getting it at a reduced price, but they were still having to pay. But I was able to make the content as I went along, tweak it according to what they said to me. And obviously, I was able to get some great testimonials. And it was only when I'd run that through about five times, actually, that I felt ready to have something which was kind of bigger and better and that I could market to more people. So obviously, I'm now marketing my programs to hundreds of people. And the thing as well is that if you're already in business and you've already got some clients, then the best place to look for people to buy your program or to do your course is amongst your current clients or people you've worked with before. So my very first coaching program, my group coaching program that I've pretty much now turned into a course that I sell, was 10, 12 people, I think it was, who I already knew. I sent personal emails. So I thought, I just made a list of all the people that I knew and had worked with in the past, I thought might be interested, or people that had told me that they were interested in PR, or people that had told me they had friends who were interested in learning about PR. And I just sent them a very personal email. I made a sales page and I got, it was 12 people signed up on the basis of a personal email. And again, it takes all of that stress out about doing big email marketing campaigns. So if you've got an idea for an online program or a course, and I just see the people do this all the time, is don't spend months creating the content up front, because until people actually get their credit card out and they pay, you won't know if they're interested in what you've got to offer. So instead, create a sales page for a small group program, a group of people that can run through your resources. You can make them as you go along if you like. Charge them less than you're going to charge. I mean, with a group program, obviously you probably would charge more if it's a smaller group, but you know, give them a good deal on it and then you can road test the program. It really is so much better all round, and it also means that you can generate income, get some money coming in quicker. So the last area to look at when it comes to being small or thinking small if you want to go big is attracting customers and clients. And I think when you're in business and you're obviously keen to sell, keen to get new customers or clients, it's so tempting to be looking for new leads all the time. So if you have an email list, like blasting your list, or if you're trying to build an email list, just trying to build it as quickly as possible so that you have as many people on there as possible. But actually, for most of us, when it comes to finding clients or finding customers, the best place to find them is usually in amongst the people you're either already working with or have worked with in the past. And this really came home to me when I joined Chris Marr's Content Marketing Academy. Now, I've interviewed Chris on the podcast before, and Chris is the founder of the Content Marketing Academy, so it's a membership community, but he also runs a live event every year in Edinburgh. I'm speaking at it this year. It's on June 8th and 9th. It's a really fab event. But I noticed something in January about Chris's event that he was holding. He was holding a January kickoff event to kick off the year. That was a really great idea. I'm going to steal it and do something similar in my business next year. And what I noticed was he's only got a couple of hundred members in his membership community, but they're really, really engaged. And they were practically all at that event in January. And then I thought back to last year's Content Marketing Academy in June. And I thought, you know what? I think pretty much most of his members were at the event in June as well. And it struck me that they're already paying, I think it's £300 or £400 a year to be a member anyway. So they paid a similar amount to attend Content Marketing Academy event last year. They have also paid to go to this January kickoff event. I'm pretty sure I reckon it was at least 2/3 of the members were there. I thought, that's pretty good going, isn't it? Because if somebody's already paying an annual membership, but that they're also willing to spend to come on a day's training with you twice a year, then that's actually really, really good. And I think it shows how committed Chris is to that community and building those relationships in the community. But it reminded me of some advice that I was given about my business towards the end of last year. And this was James Shramko, who I've also interviewed on the podcast about how to sell without feeling sleazy. And he said to me, your business almost needs to be like a car dealership. You have to have one key thing that you do, which is the core of what you do. And then From there, you can upsell or cross-sell or downsell other products and services. But when you really focus on the one key thing that you do, then you'll find it so much easier to cross-sell or upsell or downsell other products or services that you've got. And I really loved that idea of the car dealership. So obviously when you go to buy a new car, then they sell you a new car. But while you're there or after you've bought the car, they'll be trying to sell you insurance policies or they might be offering you some kind of service plan, or they obviously might offer you new parts in the future, depending on what happens with your car. So I kind of loved that metaphor. It really kind of made sense to me. And since that conversation, and actually since seeing what Chris Marr is doing with the Content Marketing Academy, I've really kind of worked out that focusing on my membership community, so focusing on the Soulful PR Studio, I've got 250 or so members now, is really the right thing to do. Not only is it the thing that I love doing the most, so I love working in that kind of one-to-many model, I love working with like lots of people at one time, I love helping people online, I love helping people on a journey, so I much prefer to help people over a period of time so I can help them get results rather than kind of give them a course and then kind of, you know, not hear from them again. I love that kind of ongoing relationship. And something really interesting for me is I'm holding my Soulful PR event in July. And I've noticed that this time round, that actually probably about 60% of the tickets that we've sold so far are to people who are already in the Soulful PR studio. So similar to Chris Marr's model, just showing that actually, you know, when you do have other products or services to sell, then naturally they're going to be of more interest to people who already do business with you or have done recently. And I think that's kind of testimony to that. So that's one thing I'd really urge you to think about. So instead of trying to, you know, attract loads of different kinds of customers or be everything to every type of customer, actually, if you really focus on serving one kind of customer in a particular way and building those relationships, then when you do have other products and services to sell, then you're going to find that much easier. So focusing on one thing, in my case, it's focusing on the members of my Soulful PR studio. And I found that since I've really focused on that's my main thing when I get up in the morning, that's my main focus is serving that group of people, then that's helped. You know, I'm going to be bringing out my media diary later on in the year again. And again, I would say that I'm predicting that the majority of those will go to people who are already in my studio. The first ones will certainly go to the people who are already in my membership community. I'm going to be bringing out some new things over the next few years. And again, I think they're going to appeal to the people who are already working with me, who already like what I'm doing. So I really would, you know, urge you to have a think about how you might adopt that kind of model in your business. What could be the one thing that you focus on that will make everything else easier? And this brings me really to my inspiration for this episode and for this approach, this thinking small in order to go big. It's a book that I read a few years ago and I recently reread it, which is The One Thing by Jay Papasan and Gary Keller. And there's a key quote in that book, which I always remember when I find myself getting overwhelmed or I find myself trying to be everything to everybody. And the question is, what is the one thing I can do right now that by doing it would make everything else easier or unnecessary? So in my case, focusing on my membership community makes it easier for me to sell my events or easier to sell books or easier to sell media diaries. So having one central focus, what could you focus on in your business that would make everything else easier or unnecessary? You've been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, why not come over and join my Facebook community? I've recently opened a Facebook group that's exclusively for podcast listeners, and you can find it at the Soulful PR Podcast Community. That's the Soulful PR Podcast Community, and I'd love to see you over there.
You've just been listening to the Soulful PR Podcast with Janet Murray. If you enjoyed the show, she'd really appreciate you leaving a review on iTunes. And don't forget to head over to www.janetmurray.co.uk for more free content that will help you get media coverage for your business.